Welcome to ITE 1, Module 16. What we're going to talk about today is a security plan. And we're going to talk about how we make a security plan. And this channel is fairly straightforward. Honestly, it takes you through step by step exactly how to do a I have to plug in my computer or my note taker. Exactly how to create a security plan, what needs to be in it, how to base these things on your customers' needs. It's fairly straightforward. We shouldn't have any issues getting through it. Does anyone have any questions on labs or anything before we start? So quiet.
I had a question about finishing labs, because yep. I don't have mine yep. all finished. Are we okay to just finish them, complete them as we go through January, or do we have to get permission
yeah.
and extension?
Yeah. No. Look, if you are still finishing your 11 through 13 labs, you're well past the due date, but you still want to finish them. So it's not like you have to go and get an extension for 11 through 13. You've already passed that deadline, and just keep working on it. And
if you
turn them in when you do.
Module 4, well, there'd be a bit more of a problem, wouldn't there?
There is somebody at Module 4, but they've got special circumstances.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Am I here? Am I unmuted?
Thank you. You're unmuted.
Yeah, you're good.
Okay, cool.
So, just looking for my Module 16. 1116. Oh, no, that's content. We don't want that. Did it last term, so I should.
And that's where I got mixed up.
If they aren't on there, I know where they are.
Is anyone doing a backup recording?
I am.
Ah, here they are. I misspelled module, and so I didn't find them. All right, today we're going to be reviewing security what?
You're introducing
oh,
me
yeah.
at this point.
I am, sorry. Okay, everybody, welcome to ITE 1, Module 16. Our last module of term, unless anyone has anything else that they want us to talk about. We have another month left. If you want something talked about, I am around from about 9 to 10 o'clock and can do that for you because now I work 11 to 8. So if you want something talked about or reviewed throughout this month, do email and we'll try and set something up. If less than 3 people want it, well, then we'll just call you on Skype. But if we want 3 people or more to do something, we're definitely happy to do it. Otherwise, we'll just call you on Skype and talk with you about it. Okay, today we're going to be reviewing security procedures. We'll be going through how to create and implement a security policy. A security policy is a collection of rules, guidelines, and checklists. The first thing you need to do when we're working with the security is work with management to develop it. Your security policy needs to protect all of your devices and data. This plan is a comprehensive statement about the level of security and how it will be achieved. You're going to want to ask the following questions to determine security factors. Is the computer located at home or a business? Why do you think that's relevant? No one? No one knows why that's going to be relevant.
The type
well,
of
it'd be a different
traffic
thing.
That you would have in an office or maybe a production type environment would be rather different than the type of traffic you would have at home generally, so the way actual physical security would be set up could vary a lot, and interference could maybe vary a lot on, you know, as far, I don't know, well, that's not really in this, but also
okay.
wireless
okay.
environments could be very different because of the amount of space that needs to be covered, maybe, and what the perimeter's like.
Absolutely. John, what did you have to say?
I was just going to say that if it's a home computer, it's the security of antivirus software and so forth is a little bit more on the user of the computer, whereas at a business it might be managed by a IT department or something like that.
Yeah, absolutely. Bert's wireless was right on, that home computers may be more susceptible to the wireless intrusions. Oh, God. I do have a story about wireless intrusion or security. Which one? Well, what one about the wireless intrusion? Oh, yes! I do have a wireless intrusion story for you guys. And I almost forgot. So there was a woman. Poor old woman. Very nice lady. And I was speaking to her at IINet. And she called me. And she said, now, I've gone over my quota. I've gone over my 10 gig quota, and I don't know how. I wasn't doing anything on the internet. I was had visitors over, and at 4 o'clock, I got told that I was over 80% of my quota, and at 10 o'clock, I was told I was at 100% of my quota. And my visitors left at 10:30. I went to bed, but still, someone downloaded stuff between 2 in the morning and 8 in the morning, and I wasn't even up. I don't know what happened, and I had to explain to this woman that her wireless had been hacked, and she probably needed to change that password and any other passwords of the website she had accessed.
Ouch.
It wasn't good.
I've heard bad stories about that kind of thing. People
yeah,
using
I felt
people's
really
wireless to commit illegal activities and then leaving.
I don't think they were probably committing illegal activities.
Oh, no. Yeah. They were probably just...
I think these people were probably just being dicks.
Yeah.
But that has happened. People looked at porn on other people's wireless, and then, of course, it comes back on them because they say, well,
yeah,
it was your network, regardless of whether it was you or, you know, that old man next door or whoever.
Gary told a story to me. Internet security division of his police department. They went and tried to bust this guy for child porn. He's like, I don't have any child porn. I don't do child porn. No, that's, you know, no. And they had a look at this guy's computers, and he totally didn't. And somebody had been on his wireless, and they showed him how to secure his wireless and said, look, you need to keep this secure because somebody's been downloading child porn on your wireless.
He's lucky they were so nice to him.
Yeah. Absolutely. In businesses, the problems may be more along the lines of network intrusion because of users abusing their access privileges, or just people wanting to hack the business and those kind of thing. The next question we're going to want to ask is there full-time internet access? Does anyone know why this is important?
Constant connectivity makes you more vulnerable.
It does. You could get viruses, you could get someone hacking into your network. The longer you're connected to the internet, as he says, the longer you're going to, the bigger chance you're going to have of getting infected from other computers or from any number of other things and nasties on the internet.
Everybody remember my lawyer story from last week with the woman that got upset because they turned their wireless off at 11 o'clock at night when she was busy stealing it?
Yeah.
All right. A computer accessing the internet should be configured with firewalls and antivirus software. That's pretty much common sense for you guys. I shouldn't have to tell you that. But just one more time, yeah. Antivirus and firewall, at the minimum, for a computer accessing the internet. Now, if you have...
story.
Okay.
Very quick. I had a computer that was... This was back about 4 years ago. I had a computer with routable IP addresses. I was doing an XP install, and I was getting infected with the blaster worm before the install had even completed, as soon as the networking stack came up.
Now, if you're behind a router, you probably have a hardware firewall and don't need to worry about a software firewall, unless you really want to. So, don't panic. You're probably okay. Is the computer a laptop? Why does it matter if the computer's a laptop? Anyone?
Well, because they're more portable, they are also subject to physical theft.
Yep. Your laptops can grow legs and walk away. There are measures to secure laptops, such as cable locks. We'll be talking a little more about that. Those are our questions. Our security policy is going to include the following items. The first thing we're going to have in our security policy is our acceptable use statement for the organization. It identifies people permitted to use the computer equipment in an organization. It identifies devices that are permitted to be installed on a network, as well as the condition of the installation. Now, we're going to talk about somebody that we talked about last year, and her name is Tight Tanya. Now, Tight Tanya has a business. She makes lockable wallets for people so that they can keep all of their money locked up, and they have to actually push in a little tactile combination to get at their money, because she doesn't think that spending money is a good idea. But she runs a little home business type of thing, and we got to explain to Tight Tanya why a security policy might be a good idea, and we've got to figure out what solutions would be good for her as we go through this module. So we're going to be talking about her. Does anyone, first off, want to have a go at explaining why security might be good? Might seem to be a good idea. Rob's out, yeah.
You get to come back in a minute, because he's answered two questions and the rest of our students are asleep.
Yeah. Wake up, guys. Anyone want to have a go at explaining why Tight Tanya might actually need a security policy for her business?
Do we need to start picking on people?
Yeah, because we're seriously going to.
She's got,
You're away from your microphone, Bert.
Information, probably. And that's a good way to get very annoyed customers if they find out that their credit card information went public from your computer or your network or your business. That would be a start. And
yeah, you're really far away from your microphone, Bert.
Yes, I am. Can you hear me better now?
Little.
I don't know if you're on the right one.
No, you sound like you're on a laptop mic or something in the internal, so I don't think you're near the microphone that you think you are.
Can you hear me better now?
Yes, we can.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That's better.
Yes, we can.
Yes. No, I was far away. The first guest was the right one. I knew I was far away, and I got a little closer, but it wasn't close enough. Anyway, so besides the fact that you could get a customer's information hacked or stolen, you might even have competition that would be spying on you, and maybe it's, you know, some young smart kid that knows how to get into things, and they might even steal your customers and try to sell to them, go behind your back, or undercut your price by a few cents or something. So that would be another reason.
Good one.
Absolutely. And anyone else, not Bert or Rob, more than the customers being annoyed, what else could happen to her? The customers are annoyed, but what could the customers do?
There's a lots of things they could do. Anybody got any idea?
Okay, I'm gonna start.
I didn't hear the whole story. It's my fault.
Okay, I'll explain it to you. Alright, so we've got Tight Tanya. And Tight Tanya has a little home business. She makes little wallets that are locked by a combination, so that you can't get at your money unless you type in the combination, because she thinks spending money is bad. And we've got to convince her that a security policy is a good idea. And, you know, she's very tight because she doesn't like to spend money, and she makes products so people can't spend money. So we've got to convince this woman why a security policy is a good idea. So why would you think, Marlene, what would you tell her? If she asked you why would I want a security policy? It's probably going to cost me money, and what good would it be to me?
Well, I think it may cost her money if she doesn't have a security policy. As in, you know, somebody can steal her computer or steal her identity, use her credit card information that she may have on her computer, whatever, but it may cost her money not to have a security.
Yeah, fair enough. Ali, what might happen, what might the customers do other than be annoyed at Tanya that might lose her money?
Well, if their information, like their credit card numbers, are stolen or whatever, they could possibly sue her because she wasn't responsible enough to take care of their information.
Yes, class action lawsuit is a not really big, but a possibility here if she has a serious security credit card breach. Yeah, and that you will have customers in your lives that will not want a security policy, and you have to convince them, and you have to explain these things to them, and you have to really try to explain to them why it's going to save them money in the long run to have a security policy. Alright. Modems and wireless access points are example of hardware that could expose the network to attacks. So you want to make sure that you lock those up, and you want to make sure that you have your firewalls turned on the router so that that doesn't happen. It defines requirements necessary for data to remain confidential on the network. It determines a process for employees to acquire access to equipment and data. This process may require the employee to sign an agreement regarding the company rules. It also lists the consequences for failure to comply. The security policy should also provide detailed information about the following issues in case of an emergency. steps to take after a breach in security, who to contact in an emergency, information to share with customers, vendors, and the media, secondary locations to use in an evacuation, steps to take in an emergency, or steps to take after an emergency is over, including the priority of services to be restored. Who has to follow a security plan for it to be successful? Can anyone tell me?
Everyone.
Absolutely. Everyone has to do it. From the CEO to the janitor. Even though the janitor doesn't use the computers, the janitor needs to be educated about physical security and policies for emergencies.
Now, he might have more.
Actually, the janitor's
like
probably a really important guy.
Absolutely, but a lot of people wouldn't think so. Now, we have an activity we could do, but we're not going to, because it really doesn't make much sense to do it, because it's about our classroom. So this Tight Tanya activity will be our activity for today. It was kind of pointless. For anyone else who isn't here, though, you are still responsible for that activity, and you need to think about who would be responsible for these things in regards to the CAVI classroom and answer all of the questions. So, yeah. All right. Physical security involves four interrelated aspects: access, data, infrastructure, and the physical computer. The first step is an obvious one. Restrict access to the physical location. Fences and security hardware, such as locks, keep people out. Next, protect the network infrastructure, such as cabling, telecommunications equipment, and network devices, by securing telecommunications rooms, implementing wireless detection for unauthorized access points, using hardware firewalls, network management systems that detect changes in wireless, and patch panels.
Here's a concept. It's many organizations, you actually have to register with the central help desk before you can, with your MAC address, before you can plug into any wall socket.
Yeah, I know some colleges are doing that. If you don't want to use their, like, I know someone had the Cisco Clean Access Agent, and if you didn't want to use that, then you had to give them your MAC address and stuff, or I forget how it worked.
Fair enough. Next, protect individual computers using cable locks for laptops and docking stations. Lockable cases. Finally, protect data with hardware that prevents unauthorized access or theft of media, such as lockable hard drive carriers, secure storage and transport of backup media, and USB security dongles. The best methods of securing the equipment depend on many factors. Some of these are how the equipment is used, where the computer equipment is located, what user access to data is required, for instance, a computer in a busy public place, such as a library, requires additional protection of from theft and vandalism. In a busy call center, a server may need to be secured in a locked equipment room. Okay. Where it is necessary to use a laptop computer in a public place, a security dongle, shown in Figure 2, which you guys can look at, ensures that the system locks if the user and laptop are separated. You can also use software to help protect your organization.
I actually saw, I have free software, I'm going to have to ask Lisa what it was called, but there was one you could get for your PC that you could install it, and it would actually like activate your webcam and everything and tell you where the PC was, and it was a freebie. And it sort of sat in the background on the system and monitored where you were and stuff. So I'll see if I can get the name of that for you all, but that was really interesting, and you can do that on laptops, desktops, whatever.
That is
okay.
Cool.
Alright. So, our friend Tanya works in her little home office, and her router, wireless router, lays on the table. Her computer sits under her desk, and it's just there. So, the people that come into her in and out of her house are her friends and her cleaner and access workers that take her shopping and stuff. What kind of recommendations would you make to Tanya to secure her computers and her router?
Make sure that the default security password has been changed.
Absolutely. Make sure that her wireless is actually locked down so that her cleaners and whoever else can't get onto her wireless access points would be a good idea. How are we going to secure the physical computers?
Well, it's like a desk with a lock?
Yeah, get a lock on her office door and keep the key with her. And when someone's cleaning that area, she should probably unlock it and supervise them.
If there are multiple people in the business, create user accounts for everyone.
Yeah, sure. Her mom actually does some of her accounting, so that's the only other person, and it's probably okay. But maybe a password on her user account wouldn't go astray.
Yeah.
I'm thinking, what about putting your financial information on secure crypt volumes? I'm not in the class, but that would be something I'd be doing.
Yeah.
Well, it needs to be somewhere safe anyway.
Sorry, true.
Where is it right now?
On our hard drive?
It's just like in an Excel sheet, isn't it? Just hanging out.
Yeah, probably.
I think that's what you said.
That needs to be secured, yeah.
Yeah, she probably should do that. Alright.
Wait, how are you suggesting she secure?
TrueCrypt. You could put it in a TrueCrypt volume.
TrueCrypt. It's free. You can get it off Ninite. But I don't really want to pound my desk. Read the documentation! Because if you don't, it will be useless to you. It is really important with TrueCrypt to read the documentation. And if you forget your password, you're not getting it back. The original website is TrueCrypt.org. Runs on the Mac, Windows, and Linux. So there you go.
And it is awesome. I want to set it up for my... It's, like, amazing, the stuff. When you first see it, it's like, wow, that can really be done? Like, I can do it? I don't have to be in the CIA to do this? Someone did it for me? I mean, it's really...
And it's
just
free.
Check it out, even if you don't need it or want it. Yeah.
Yeah, it's free. That makes Tanya happy.
Free is good.
Alright. So, yeah, that's basically her physical security policy. That's all she had to do. And it didn't cost her much. She's happy, and honestly, it was really worrying her about the cleaners getting in and walking into her little room and maybe stealing one of her little money bags that she's making. So that made her feel really good. Good job, guys. All right. We can also use software to help protect your organization. What type of software products can we use?
Antivirus.
Firewalls.
Yep. Antivirus and firewalls are very good ones for us to be able to use.
Our new Malwarebytes is out, by the way, if nobody saw Twitter. 1.6 of Malwarebytes is out.
Good.
Nice.
Cool. All right. Software firewalls are one. You can get one. You get to do a lab on the Windows firewall. This is an interesting lab. It's fun to Jaws cursor around and try and find what you're trying to find.
In Windows 7, it's very, very, very fun.
You may want to get your virtual machine out and try it on XP instead.
Yeah.
You're welcome to do that.
Grace and I literally couldn't get it to go, and we spent probably a half an hour each trying to get this thing to go and just pulling our hair out. So, yeah, virtual machine on XP is a great idea.
Another pro tip. To do this lab, you have to turn the firewall on. Even though you don't use it, you have to turn it on for a little while. There's intrusion detection systems, IDS, monitors and reports on changes in program code and unusual network activity. Applications and OS patches. Update applications and the operating system to repair security weaknesses that are discovered. Antivirus and spyware programs. The notes say that most home computers are not on protected lands. Why is this no longer true?
Because people keep setting up home networks. They've made it easier. Or because if you have a wireless router for your home, you're basically on a...
Yeah.
And wireless routers are cheap as anything.
What does a wireless router have that makes you on a protected LAN?
Probably WPA encryption.
No. A wired one has this as well. About 20 minutes ago.
It runs with no DOS at all.
Firewall.
A firewall. Yes. All of your routers, any router that I've ever seen, has a firewall inbuilt. So, because of this firewall, you are now on a protected LAN. And this firewall is going to keep out most of your network intrusions. So now, if you have a router, you are on a protected LAN. To decide what security to implement, compare the cost of your equipment and data to the cost of securing it, and decide trade-offs. What trade-offs are acceptable. If a customer doesn't have a security policy, it is our job to convince them that it might be a good idea to implement one. It will be your job to pick out techniques that will secure your customer's equipment and data that meet their needs. We're going to talk about some of these techniques that you can use. And that's all the notes I've got, so I've got to go open the actual notes. So what would we suggest for security for Tanya, for software that she might want to install, or things she could do for software?
I think a very good example would be
daily, and automatically to run when she's shutting down or something.
Microsoft Essentials, it's free.
It is free. And it's all right. Good. Yeah, it's all right.
Ever since they got bitched out for having really crummy detection logic, Microsoft went and put some more effort in to make it better. But it used to actually have quite a bad rap. It's probably not the best thing you can have, but it's not the worst thing either.
It'll do for a home system.
Yeah.
The latest Avast free is looking pretty good to me. I've only had it for a few weeks now, but I've heard good things about it for a while now, that it used to not be good, from what I can tell, but it's pretty good now, it seems.
I think Avast has been really good for me. It's caught a lot of stuff, and it, I haven't, if I have anything it hasn't caught, I don't know about it.
Hey, hey.
How long have you been using it?
I had a problem with Avast, actually.
Since I started this class, because I think it was one of the ones that somebody threw out there, and I said, oh, let me try that.
When did you have trouble, Carrie? Was it an old one, an old version, or a relatively new one?
It was a reasonably old one. I'll have to check the new version, but it went in and turned off a whole stack of my network sharing and stuff without actually telling me, and I couldn't actually get back into various shares without messing around in the user interface. It was like, don't do that. Like, if you're going to do that, tell me you're going to do that, but don't just go and shut down all my network sharing for me.
Gosh, yes. Now, I heard really bad things about it, and I actually took it off of every computer it was on. Around here, for some reason, for a few years, all the local know-nothing wannabe techs decided that Avast was the cat's meow for, I mean, since I've been living in this little town, or got back online in this little town, say the last three years anyway, and it's just really in the last year or so that I started hearing a lot of good things around on the web, and I haven't heard of any of those problems with the newer versions. But yeah, I've heard of weirdnesses, not exactly that one, but yeah. And then it was almost impossible to uninstall on some people's systems before or after they'd run into some troubles.
I've heard of that.
I heard a couple reports of that.
All right. We found where we are. We're going to talk about security techniques. And the very first one, and one you should always use, is passwords. Absolutely. Make sure that your login data is encrypted. I'm not sure if Windows is or isn't, but I guess that Active Directory would have encrypted login because nobody would use it if it didn't. Malicious software monitors the network and may record plain text passwords. If passwords are encrypted, attackers would have to decode the encryption to learn the passwords. Actually make sure they have a good password. Remember the rules about passwords. Make sure that they are at least eight characters long and have uppercase and lowercase letters and at least one number. Event logging and auditing should be enabled to monitor activity on the network. Network administrators audit the log file of events to investigate network access by unauthorized users. Wireless configurations. Your wireless connections are especially vulnerable because you don't need physical access to the wireless network to get it. You want to configure your wireless access points to encrypt data. You've got security technologies that include hash encoding, symmetric encryption, asymmetric encryption, and virtual private networks, VPNs, which we spoke about in Chapter 8. Each technology is used for a specific purpose. Hash encoding, or hashing, ensures that the messages are not corrupted or tampered with during a transmission. Hashing uses a mathematical function to create a numeric value that is unique to the data. If even one character is changed, the function output called the message digest will not be the same. However, the function is one way. Knowing the message digest does not allow an attacker to recreate the message. This makes it difficult for someone to intercept and change messages.
Example, MD5 sums.
Yeah, I was just going to talk about that.
Up on the net somewhere.
Yeah, I've seen SHA-1 as well, which you're going to probably talk about.
The names of the most popular hashing algorithms are SHA and MD5. We've seen the MD5 checksums, as Carrie said. Symmetric encryption requires both sides of an encrypted conversation to use an encryption key to encode and decode data. The sender and receiver must use identical keys. There's an illustration of that that you guys can look at.
I was just going to say that it is also known as pre-shared key or PSK. So if ever you're setting up your wireless access points and you're doing WPA to PSK and you're like, what's an AES and a CCP and a CDB and a PSK is the one where you put the same key in on both. Pre-shared key. That got me for weeks until I realized that that's what PSK stood for.
We've got asymmetric encryption, which requires two keys, a private key and a public key. The public key can be widely distributed, including emailing in clear text or posted on the web. The private key is kept by an individual and must not be disclosed to any other party. These keys can be used in two ways. Public key encryption is used when a single organization needs to receive encrypted text from a number of sources. The public key can be widely distributed and used to encrypt the messages. The intended recipient is the only party to have the private key, which is used to decrypt the messages. In the case of digital signatures, a private key is required for encrypting a message, and a public key is needed to decode the message. This approach allows the receiver to be confident about the source of the message, because only a message encrypted using the originator's private key could be decrypted by the public key. So that's how driver signing works, I reckon, with the Windows one. Asymmetric encryption using digital signatures is also illustrated. RSA is the most popular example of asymmetric encryption. VPN, which we have spoken about before, uses secure protocol to encrypt and secure data as if it was traveling in a private corporate LAN, even though the data actually travels over any network, for example, the internet. Security data pipeline between points in the VPN are called secure tunnels. The process is illustrated in Figure 4. We've already gone through the process. This technology often uses IPsec to secure communications between devices. Any questions on those? You won't be tested on them, I don't believe, except for VPN, I think.
In the old days, you used to be. I don't know if you are.
I don't think you are anymore. I think it's only VPN.
Has anyone used a VPN? Just out of morbid curiosity?
No, I haven't.
They're kind of cool. We use them for checking our mail on remote sites until the iDevices decided that they weren't implementing any VPN standards and we weren't using them anymore, so got to look into that. But yeah, we used to use a VPN for doing our email.
When did they stop doing that?
They'll support certain VPNs, but I've got to do research into what they support and that sort of thing.
Oh.
Hey, we know that we don't only use one method of securing our data, right? We're going to use overlapping methods of securing data. Because one just isn't going to be enough. You don't just put a password on it and call it done. What we do is we use something called two-factor security. When considering a security program, the cost of implementation has to be balanced against the value of the data that you want to protect, as we talked about. All right. We're going to go back into security, physical security. Use security hardware to protect against breaches and loss of data or equipment. These access control measures include the following. Lock? Honestly, if we don't know what a lock is, I don't know what we're doing here. So I'm not going to tell you.
What's
about,
that?
Well, I think you got to go back to first or second grade. I can't help you. Sorry. One thing that...
It's the thing on your door, Ali, that your parents used to keep you in. Just kidding.
Oh,
yeah. That's a good answer.
In my
except
basement
they reversed
bedroom.
It around to the outside.
That's the point. They were keeping him in. When an employee leaves and they don't give your key back, obviously you might want to change the locks. All right. A conduit is a casing protecting the infrastructure media from damaged and unauthorized access. It's basically a hard plastic shell over your network cables. If you've ever been to a school and felt the little long things on the walls that seem to go up or across, that's probably a cable conduit. Card keys. This is a tool used for physical areas. If a card key is lost or stolen, only the missing card must be deactivated, much better than a lock. Card key systems are more expensive than security locks, but much easier to use and implement. In fact, my card key at my work actually allows me to get discounts to places and lets me into all sorts of
different
places.
That's cool.
That's awesome.
Question,
Go ahead.
What's a good method for actually marking those to make sure that you consistently put them in the right way?
Our card keys, you just wave in front of it and goes, beep!
Oh, that's awesome. But what if it's one where you actually have to put it in? That's the trouble I always
have. You know what I use? I use tape. I put a bit of tape on the end that I've got to hold on to.
Oh, okay.
And I always have the hotel staff put a piece of tape or a sticker on it, and that seems to work for me.
Okay.
But these card keys are so cool. They're hard, and they're like plastic, so and they've got your picture on them, so they're like really, really swank, cool card keys.
That's awesome.
Video equipment. This records images and sounds for monitoring activity. Duh. The recorded data must be monitored for problems, you think. A security guard. You know what, if we have any questions on what a security guard is...
You can read it, it's in there.
Yeah, it actually is
if
in
you're
here.
You're really not sure.
Yeah, it tells really you exactly what a security guard does.
They're the people that see somebody blind and say, oh, honey, I don't need to examine your pack. Go on in.
Yeah, you don't have a bomb.
Those lumps especially under blind. Your shirt mean nothing. Just go on.
They're just extra blind. Blind people have extra bits, don't they? Yeah, go on in. biometric devices measure physical information about a user. They're good for highly secure areas. However, most small organizations, this type of solution would be too expensive. And honestly, they aren't 100% accurate. Ever seen the movie where they take the guy's eye out so that they can use his iris in the scan? Yeah, there are lots of
things. Isn't it Angels and Demons?
Yeah, I think it was.
I was talking.
Yeah, so honestly... No. Get a key card. They work better. Any questions on physical security methods? Good. You can protect your data using security devices to authenticate employees' access. Two-factor identification is a method of increasing security. Employees must use both a password and a data security device similar to those listed here. Smart cards. This device has the ability to store data safely. The internal memory is an embedded integrated circuit chip, ICC, that connects to a reader either directly or through a wireless connection. Smart cards are used in many applications worldwide, such as secure ID badges, online authentication devices, and secure credit card payments. A security key fob. This is a small device that resembles...
Do you guys have PayPass over there in America?
Yeah, the little tap... yeah, we do.
That's an example of a smart card. Your credit card where you just hold it near the thing and wait 5 seconds and it goes... Beep, beep, beep. You're now poorer. Sorry, go on, Grace. I'll just mention that because that is an example of a smart card.
No worries. A key fob is a small device that resembles an ornament on a key ring. It has a small radio system that communicates with the computer over a short range. The fobs are small enough to attach to a key ring, and the computer must detect the signal from the key fob before it will accept a username and password. We've got biometric devices, like your fingerprint readers or facial recognition.
I know our teachers at school, one that had a key fob to actually get into the building.
Yeah. The user is granted X. Yeah, they're cool. I have one. It's a security key fob for my keys, so they can return it, and it'll read the signature and knows whose keys it is. The user is granted access if the characteristics of themselves match the database, and they enter the correct login information.
Has everyone seen Da Vinci Code, where they rip out the guy's eye and use it on the scanner?
I thought it was Angels and Demons. It's one of those two.
I thought it was Angels and Demons.
It is Angels and Demons, actually.
We just mentioned that. Yeah, same bloke.
I was going to say, I don't remember the... Because I watched the Da Vinci Code. I know I would remember the audio describer talking about someone's eye getting taken out.
Yeah.
He does, too.
I would have remembered that. Oh, I'm sure they are.
Yeah. Alright, this is a lot of people's favorite part of their jobs as security people, and this is hardware destruction. Removing sensitive data from hardware and software when data is no longer needed. Hardware destruction must be performed before recycling or discarding items that store data. Three methods are commonly used to either destroy or recycle data and hard drives. Data wiping, hard drive destruction, and hard drive recycling. The level of security that customers need determines which devices are used to keep data and equipment secure and how data should be removed or destroyed. Alright, hold on just a second. Alright. It doesn't say here, it just kind of skips over that. But basically, if a computer is going to go to another employee in the company and you don't really care about the data and the data wasn't actually that important, so a call center staff member leaves and the computer's going to another call center staff member, just re-ghost the computer. Now, if a computer has really, really confidential data, you're probably going to pull the hard drive out and smash it with a hammer.
No, there are things called like eraser and stuff that will actually do a 40-pass erase. So if you're going to reuse the computer, you can actually do a 40-pass erase and then reuse it.
And the Mac can do that.
If you're not, though, if the computer's if the computer is actually going not going to be reused, you might go and smash the hard drive.
Or maybe you're just bored on a Saturday afternoon. And
yeah, absolutely. You just want to smash a hard drive.
Apparently that's a lot harder to do than it seems like it should be.
Yeah.
It is. It's very difficult. They are quite ruggedly constructed. And they don't break as easily as you'd think.
I think they actually have machines that can specifically do it if you really do it a lot. I think it was Marshall was telling us that his company or someone had a thing, you just put the hard drive in and it crushed.
It's not nearly as fun as beating the crap out of it.
No, but more effective, I'm sure.
Yeah, probably.
Just doing my job here.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so we're going to talk about firewalls next. You'd want to use a firewall as well as other security software. This isn't an and/or thing. This is that you totally should use a firewall because you're going to get hacked off the face of the earth if you don't. There are hardware and software firewalls. As I said, hardware firewalls are separate pieces of equipment that stand alone, such as your router or actual hardware firewalls. I think you guys get to research hardware and software firewall. And
man, those can be expensive.
Take a look at how expensive they are. It's unreal. Okay. There are several modes of filtering packets. A packet filter. This is a set of rules that allows or denies traffic based on criteria such as IP addresses, protocols, or ports used. A proxy firewall. This is a firewall installed on a proxy server that inspects all traffic and allows or denies packets based on the configured rules. A proxy server is a server that relays between a client and a destination server on the internet. That's pretty obvious. Stateful packet inspection. This is a firewall that keeps track of the state of network connections traveling through the firewall. Packets that are not part of a known connection are dropped. And I think most of the firewalls that you're going to come up against are stateful firewalls. Because usually you make a connection to something. Something doesn't just randomly make a connection to you. Even on MSN, where you think, wait, if someone sends me a message, I won't get it. No, that's not true. Because when you log into the MSN client, you have made a connection. And that port stays open. So, there you go. A hardware firewall is a physical filtering component that inspects data packets from the network before they reach the computers and other devices on the network. It is a freestanding unit that does not use the resources of the computer. It is protecting, so there is no impact on processing performance. Your software firewall is an application on a computer that inspects and filters data packets. I said Windows Firewall is an example. It's included in Windows operating systems after SP2. I guess it might have been in SP1, but nobody knew about it, so they really put it in and really made a big deal about it in SP2.
It was in SP1, however, it didn't have the pop-up balloons or the alert stuff, so it would just silently jemmy your network traffic up sideways, and you'd have to go, and the first thing you did was go in and turn it off. Whereas in SP2, you had the thing that used to pop up and tell you about it.
It does impact the performance of a computer. On a secure network, if computer component performance is not an issue, you should enable internal operating system firewalls. For additional security, you could.
If you're out at an airport or a coffee shop or something, you probably want to turn your Windows firewall on, because you don't know whether that smart kid drinking 6 lattes on the desk behind you is hacking into your stuff and possibly setting the password to sex123 on the C share that you've shared your whole hard drive out was not a good idea. So, has anyone noticed in 7 how you've got those network profiles where it can be a home network, a work
Love
network,
it.
A public network?
Yeah.
We have to be aware that you need to be able to understand what those profiles actually do. Don't just blindly trust them. But yes, we all just click on public and think we're safe, but that's okay. But they are designed for that sort of ability, and you can actually customize them all if you know what you're doing. But we don't go into that in this module.
And you are actually able to turn on firewall on public and not on home or work. So that can be a good look.
Yeah, I must say I do that actually. Firewalls on
mine's
public,
that way.
And then home and work. But then again, it depends on where I am at work, because sometimes I'll tell it on public because I don't trust what's going on at work. But it is dangerous. Like, there was an exploit recently called Fire Sheep, which was halfway through last year, and it would actually steal the authentication cookies for Facebook and stuff, so you could actually steal the authentication cookies and then hack into people's Facebook accounts. Stuff to be aware of.
Absolutely. And I actually got my Facebook hacked about a month ago. Don't know, or not hacked, but I got a warning that someone had tried to access my account and it had been locked and all this good stuff. But that wasn't fun at all.
Any questions? Well, Grace
Any
is
questions?
Running this place. This is all pretty straightforward, but it's very important stuff.
So what kind of firewall would we suggest for Tanya?
Anyone?
We awake.
What was the question? I didn't hear
it. How about Windows Firewall that's already on her computer?
Absolutely. Yeah, that would be a good idea. And we'd check and make sure that the firewall on her router was good and on, and that she actually had one.
Tomato actually
should, so.
Has a firewall, and you cannot turn it off, which I think is, it for a second when you look, it makes you think it's not there, but when you look, they actually in the FAQ say, no, it's here, we don't give you the option to turn it off, because we figure you shouldn't.
That's what the SSH option's for, where you smash the IP chains, and then it goes away.
Hey.
You go in with the Telnet client, and you go, right, smash-a-roo with the chains, and then you go and hack its little scripts, and then you go, right, now you're not firewalling me, now stop it.
Oh, okay, so you can, but most people probably want to leave it.
That's right.
All right, we're going to talk about implementing layers of security and configuring security settings. A network has many different types of security settings. We need to configure the security settings for folders and files, wireless devices and clients, and hardware and software firewalls. Permission levels for folders and files. These are configured to limit individual or group users' access to specific data. Both FAT and NTFS allow folder sharing and folder level permissions for users with network access. The additional security of file level permissions is only provided in your NTFS. And if you want to compare them, there are two figures that will allow you to look at them and be able to see the difference. When configuring network share permissions for a computer that has NTFS, you must create a network share and assign shared permission to users or groups. Only users and groups with both NTFS permissions and shared permissions can access a network share. File and network share permissions can be granted to individuals or through membership within a group. If an individual or a group is denied permissions to a network share, this denial overrides any other permissions given. For example, if you deny someone permission to a network share, that user cannot access the share, even if the user is the administrator or part of an administrator group. So if you say no, they can't, you don't add them in and say they have access to that network share, you go and deny them permissions, they're not getting in. It doesn't matter who they are. They can be the biggest, highest administrator ever, but they're not getting in. Secure? What?
Sorry, I was just going to say, if you actually have like a whole shared out folder and you want to actually block off access to a certain set of subfolders because you don't want your kids looking at something, these file system permissions are worth a look. That's kind of the home use I can think for them. It's like, yeah, here's all my music and here's the folder of stuff I prefer you didn't listen to.
Instruction manuals, yeah.
Yeah, that's what's in there.
Well, that's what the folder name is, so it must be. Mommy, why can't I look at your instruction manuals?
I knew somebody that used to store all of their precious documents in the recycle bin. And then they took it to a tech once, and the tech emptied the recycle bin. And he was very, very sad.
I know someone who also, in a similar vein, decided that his idea of saving important email that he had gotten in his inbox was to move it into the sent items folder, and I about lost my mind.
Yeah, well...
That's not what that's for!
Yeah.
No. Well, it's not exactly computer-related, but I had some cash money that I was saving for something important. I knew I wasn't going to need to touch for a little while. And I had it stored in an oven that I wasn't going to be using for a while. But I decided I was going to start making homemade yogurt. And this was a gas oven that I could control very delicately. And I said, well, I can just turn it on incredibly low. And I'm going to see if it gives me the temperature that I need to keep the milk, you know, just above whatever, like in the 45 degree range Celsius or 110. And I smelled a plastic smell a couple of minutes after I'd started it up. And I thought, maybe I left like a Teflon spatula or something in the oven. And I turned it off quickly. And as soon as I opened the door, I remember, the money. It was in this, you know, little plastic, like credit card holder thing. And amazingly enough, it had just melted one little crispy edged hole in this. And of the 10 $100 bills that were in it, only the outside was in too bad a shape for the bank to return, you know, to give me a new one. So I was very lucky. Very lucky. Within seconds of being horribly unlucky.
Were.
Yeah.
Expensive batch of yogurt.
Yeah, absolutely.
$100 for the first liter, but after that the price got down to normal.
Oh, that's awful. Securing a network includes the selection and configuration of several different technologies. Some of these are shown in a figure. The type of security needed by the network will indicate which security technologies must be enabled and configured in each network device. All router configuration in this text are based on the Linksys WRT300N wireless router. There's a manual for this router, and you can find most of the, actually, I know a girl who did all of her 15 and 16 router labs via research. You can do this. She did. And it wasn't fun, but she got it done.
Yeah, she didn't really want to go playing with her ISP's router, and that was all she had. And I had even told her, look, I don't think I would want to go playing with it either. And she's like, oh, I'll just see if I can, you know. I said, see what you can find. And she found what she needed.
She found it all.
It was fantastic.
Yeah, I was really proud
of her. If you have a router you feel comfortable playing with, though, I'd recommend having a look.
Can I just suggest you back the configuration up first?
Oh, yes.
Then play with it.
Gain and signal patterns of an antenna connected to a wireless access point can influence where signal can be received. Avoid transmitting signals outside of a network area by installing an antenna with a pattern of that serves your network users, or just turn the gain on the antenna down if you must. Many wireless devices built by a specific manufacturer have the same default username and password for accessing configurations. You should probably change them. If you don't change them, people can actually go in and wittingly or unwittingly change your settings. There was a story about a girl who was on a router, and she thought she was on her router, and she was fixing it and doing all sorts of things,
Carrie
securing
told this
it,
story.
And realized that she hadn't done it. Hadn't done hers, she'd done someone else's. It was a record store. She walked over and she said, I'm really sorry. I've just secured your router, and I thought it was mine, and I'm so sorry. And they were like, oh no, thank you, what's the information? And they were really actually kind of grateful for it, weren't they? Carrie? Talking about the record store people.
Yeah, I told it last week, and I think they actually baked her a cake and thanked her and said that's really good. So
yeah.
Because they actually the actual router, they were both called Netgear, and theirs, one of them had been hit by lightning and fried and had disappeared, so they had just logically jumped off and connected to the other Netgear router that was within range and had no password on it.
When you first connect to the network device, you want to change these. Some only allow you to change the username and some allow you to change username and password. Some only allow you to change the password. Change both if you can. Here's the path to change it. Most wireless devices support many different security modes. Now, the most common ones are wireless equivalent privacy or wired equivalent privacy WEP. This broadcasts data between wireless access points and the client using a 64-bit or 128-bit encrypted key, but it always uses the same key, and it's very easy to hack. Wi-Fi protected access. This is an improved version of WEP. It was created as a temporary solution until 802.1i became ratified. Now 802.1i has been ratified, and we have WPA2. It covers the 802.11i standard, I'm sorry. WPA uses much stronger encryption than WEP encryption. Wi-Fi protected access to WPA2 is an improved version of WPA. It supports robust encryption, which provides government-grade security. WPA2 can be enabled with password authentication, personal, or server authentication, enterprise. And that is the one you're going to want to use if you at all possibly can. If you have all things that can support WPA2, do it, because it's less easily hacked. that woman who I was talking to a couple days ago probably was using WEP. Holy shit. Sorry.
You're going to have to get coffee, I think.
I am. Lightweight Extensible Authentication Protocol, LEAP, also called EAP Cisco. This is Krista's favorite type of security, and only Ali and Sean are going to get that if they're awake. But what?
I think I get it.
Okay. This is a wireless security protocol created by Cisco to address the weaknesses in WEP and WPA. To add wireless security, you can use the path listed in here if you're using this particular Linksys router. All right. Cool.
LEAP is one that Cisco likes to put on test because obviously they help to
make it. It's theirs.
So
yeah.
We'll see it.
SSID, service set identifier, is what you broadcast to everybody. It's Netgear. It's my awesome home router. It's whatever is broadcast so that you can find that router. By default, it broadcasts. You can turn this off, and you should always change your SSID so you know which router is yours. Disabling the SSID makes it harder for people to find it. You actually have to know the SSID to connect to it, and the SSID on the computer that you type in must be exactly the same as the one on your wireless router. This isn't the best security measure for a wireless router, but it can help.
It's also a way to annoy your users because
yeah.
Either they won't know how to manually put it in, or some devices assume that your SSID has to be showing. You have to decide whether that's
what you
really
do. There is you unhide it for the time that it needs to be showing, and then you hide it again. That's how you get around that one. So the Xbox can see it, and then you hide it away, and it's fine.
Yeah. People can find you anyway if they're smart. So honestly, this isn't the be-all and end-all of security. Instead of turning off the SSID, use stronger encryption such as WPA2. Here's another annoyance to your users, MAC address filtering. This will allow you to filter out, or more prominently, make sure that only MAC addresses in the router's table are allowed onto the network. This is great if you don't have many MAC addresses actually connecting. This is not so great if you do have more connecting to you, because you have to go in every time you've got a friend over, every time you get a new computer, every time you get a new mobile phone, you've got to go in and connect yourself, put yourself in the MAC table before you can do anything. And you can't do it on that device. You've got to go do it on a device that is already wired in or connected to the network. So yeah, it can be really a pain, but it's very secure. And to find your MAC address, you type ipconfig/all at the command prompt. For devices other than computers, MAC addresses can usually be found on the label of the device or within the manufacturer's instructions, or somewhere in the About section, usually.
Remember when you had to get me that *#6947# whatever it was for the Nokia to get its MAC address out? That was a tricky one.
Ow. Yeah.
It's like *# and about six numbers and then a hash, and it gives you the MAC address from the phone. Grace was able to Google it up. If you've got an iDevice, it's under Settings...
About.
Settings, General, About. Don't forget the General.
Okay.
And make sure you get the right one. There's one for Bluetooth and one for Wi-Fi, if your device has both.
All right.
This is probably a real...
Go ahead.
I have a question that's probably really basic, but it's eluding me. You're talking about backing up router configurations. And, I mean, that's not the first time I've heard of that, but how would one do that? How does one back that up?
There would be an option. On your router, if there isn't that option, you can't do it.
Usually under
administration. Well, I've looked all through and I haven't seen one yet, but okay. Well, I'll look around more and more, but so
like
far I haven't.
Tools or administration or whatever.
Read your manual.
Yeah.
Read your manual.
Or Google it.
I've read a lot of it.
Or Google it.
Yeah.
I just Google how to back up configuration of and router number.
Yeah. That's the step left to take. And one other comment question. I've got, actually, I thought my wife bought this router. I just found out it's not mine, and I like it. It's from the ISP that she called and got him to bring when we had to connect some wireless stuff, and I hadn't set up this other router I had lying around. But it has a mode that lets you... It lets you mix. No, this is a completely different question. It has a mixed mode that lets you use WPA or WPA2. If you use, WP2. But does that affect performance? Does that slow things down or no? Okay.
It just makes it a little less secure.
Well, yeah, it's only for the devices that it'll do both things. So yeah.
I have to do that because my Notetaker won't work on WPA2 with my router.
Really?
Even though it says it's supposed to.
Some routers it doesn't. It gets weird. I don't know.
Yeah. At least this is weird sometimes.
Alright, a firewall that is... our firewalls will block outgoing traffic on certain ports. For example... a firewall that blocks outgoing traffic on port 21 will not allow computers to connect to a standard FTP server. The firewalls can be configured to block multiple individual ports, a range of ports, or even traffic specific to an application. Linksys 1 is also a hardware firewall. It isolates your network from other networks. It will pass two different types of traffic into your network. Traffic that originates from inside your network, which of course will just go around inside of your network, and traffic destined for a port you have intentionally left open. There are several types of hardware firewalls configurations, and we've talked about the packet filter, and we've talked about the stateful and all of those different ones already. So I won't bore you with any more of that. And there's the application layer protocol, which we haven't talked about. This intercepts all packets going to or from an application. It prevents all unwanted outside traffic from reaching protected devices.
Tomato has an amazing list of those. I could block Ventrilo on my entire network if I wanted to, or World of Warcraft, or all kinds of stuff. I looked at that and was like, oh my god.
Got a section on port forwarding and port triggering. Hardware firewalls are mainly used to block ports to prevent unauthorized access in or out of LANs. However, you might actually not want that if you were playing a game or using specific net applications that you need specific ports open for. Port forwarding is a rule-based method of directing traffic between devices on separate networks. When traffic reaches the router determines if the traffic should be forwarded to a certain device based upon the port forwarding found with the traffic. For example, port numbers are associated with specific services such as FTP, HTTP, HTTPS, and POP3. The rules determine which traffic will be sent onto the LAN. For example, a router might be configured to forward port 80, which is associated with the HTTP protocol. If the router then receives a packet with destination port 80, the router will forward this traffic to a web server inside the network. And it tells you how to add port forwarding. And I'm scrolling through that because you can look it up if you have this kind of router. Port triggering, on the other hand, allows the router to temporarily forward data through inbound ports to a specific device. You can use port triggering to forward to a computer only when a designated port range is used to make an outbound request. For example, a video game might use port 27,000 to 27,100 for connecting with other players. These are the trigger ports. A chat client might use port 56 for connecting the same player so that they can interact with each other. An example of a port triggering rule is when any gaming traffic uses an outbound port that is within the triggered port range, chat inbound traffic on port 56 will be forwarded to the computer that is being used to play the video game and chat with friends. When the game is over and the triggering ports are no longer in use, port 56 will no longer be allowed to send traffic of any type to this computer. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it's a bit elaborate, but it seems neat.
Yeah.
It's like ringing the doorbell. Somebody rings the doorbell, and then you come over and open the door. That's what port triggering is.
If no one's ringing the doorbell, you're not going to open the door.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Scrolling, scrolling, scrolling. See what's left. Dawn, what's up?
Just one point. I didn't bring this up in the firewall section, but I thought it fits well enough now. One point about software firewalls is that some of them can also trigger outbound traffic. I'm not sure how much the Windows firewalls do this, but for example, if you have a program trying to make an outgoing connection, depending on your firewall, you may have to allow it the first time it wants to connect out, and that can also be another method of give you a bit more security if you're concerned about what programs are accessing the internet, or maybe there's some malware or something that's going to make a connection out, and that'll stop it before, if it's not caught by something else. It may not catch everything either if they're, maybe they have other techniques to get past those things too. But
also keep in mind that JAWS activations require you to turn off your firewall, and all sorts of other things require you to turn off your firewall. So make sure you know how to turn it off if you need to activate your JAWS or whatever. Also, JAWS will tend to trigger those alerts the first couple of times because it does a network broadcast looking for authentication servers.
And updates in the new ones.
I'm just going to look and see how much we have left. Yeah, we got like 1.5 sections left. So I think we will come back next week because it's 10:30. And I have to be work by 11:30, so get as many of those labs done. Sean, you're responsible for module 16 labs, but you knew that already.
Absolutely.
And
I apologize and for the today.
That's okay. I was here, which is really good, because it was like the second day I've been on this schedule, so we got really lucky. So, we'll see you back here next week.